Throughout history, freethinkers have outraged the religious with their wacky ideas about the virtues of free speech, reason, and of course, eating babies. Now, God is dying, and it's time to dispose of his remains. From the pits of hell, Satan sends two puppets of the imperialist West and the Zionist Jews against God, Islam, and tiny kittens to bring you their propaganda and conspire for a new world order. This is Secular Jihadists for a Muslim Enlightenment with Ali Rizvi and Armin Navabi.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Secular Jihadist for a Muslim Enlightenment. My name is Ali Rizvi. With me is Armin Navabi. Armin, how are you tonight?
Good. I'm so excited. I miss Muhammad so much, so I'm so glad that he's here.
Yeah, so before you go on, we should clarify which Muhammad he's talking about, so you know we don't lose our audience.
I was the only Muhammad that mattered, man.
I know. Yeah, we have to let everybody know. There's, I think, one guy who's a little more famous than you. But so we have we're very excited today. There's something as the ex-Muslims of North America, which many of you know, has come out with the first of its kind apostate report, where they've surveyed hundreds of, I think, over 500 ex-Muslims living in North America to see to gather all kinds of information about them, from their demographics to their immigration status to their political leanings. And it's a fascinating report, and we're going to get into that. And joining us right now is our co-founder and president of Ex-Muslims in North America, probably the second most famous Muhammad.
Oh my God.
Muhammad Sayyid's here. Hi, Muhammad. How are you? Welcome to the podcast.
Very well, and great to see again. You guys. As Armin was saying, it's been too long seeing either of you.
Yeah. And no, it's great. Like this. How have you been? Just really quickly, how's the pandemic been for you?
It's
Ali just wants to destroy the channel. Just Ali is just trying to destroy the channel.
Oh crap! Yeah, we can't talk about it. Oh Jesus! Okay, I'm so sorry. Forgot. Okay. Yeah, they're gonna. Sorry. Yeah. Sorry about that.
I just want to say that every time ex-Muslims of North America does something, and I always think like they can't, that's it. There's nothing. It's so great. I don't know what else they're going to do that is going to be significant. Like what else could they do? And they always come up with something else. So like, we have a giant ass report that is going to explain so many things to you. Like, oh my God. Like last time it was this amazing map that was like showing. Like, I don't know. How do you guys do this? Like, you guys have
a lot of hard work.
Yeah, but like the people who are donating to Ex-Muslims of North America, they are really getting every single cent worth in return. Like, you guys are not wasting anything. You guys are producing so much valuable, not just activism, but reports and information.
Those billboard campaigns.
Oh yeah, I would be like, you guys should be very proud. Like, it's so amazing. I'm so proud of you guys. Like, you guys are such a valuable asset to all ex-Muslims in North America, you know. So thank you for all
globally,
this.
But thank you. Yeah. So my perspective on this sort of issue generally is that we try to look at where the holes are in our movement, what are the problems that we're encountering, and what can we do to sort of fill those in. So a lot of our projects focus on specific problems. So I think 2016 or 2017, we did a series of mini documentaries. At that point, there weren't that many ex-Muslims that were out there publicly. So we wanted to increase that number. So we profiled a bunch of ex-Muslims. And after that, we had an explosion where a lot of ex-Muslims came out. One of the stories was about this guy, Jamal, Somali ex-Muslim. And as a result of that, the Somali ex-Muslim community picked up. He was a big part of that. He created a bunch of online forums and groups. So recently, one of the things that we've been working on was this apostasy report. And it's because of where ex-Muslims lie on the political spectrum, intersection of right-wing, left-wing, and Muslim, and how we're demonized in a variety of ways. And what can we do to get the truth of that? People try to project their perspective onto who we are. So that's what sort of led to this report.
Yeah, you know, I think that's the thing. A lot of times people will say, well, ex-Muslims, you know, they're just allied with the far right. And you know, that's what you hear that all the time. And, you know, we know who we hear it from. a lot. But so and now you have this report, you actually have data, you have a survey of ex-Muslims in North America, and you're showing, for example, one of the results is that the vast majority of them actually are either progressive or center, they're left or center. So the things like that, I mean, when you want to counter arguments like that, instead of just speculation, you can now, I mean, we can now point to actual data.
All right, but Ali, the way you're framing this is like you're kind of making it seem like the right-leaning ex-Muslims are like, we don't want them in our circles. Like, don't dismiss them as existing.
No, ex-Muslims and ex-Muslims could be a variety.
Yeah, it could be a variety of things.
No, but it sounds like, guys, it sounded like, guys, we're not that bad. We're mostly leftist and centrist.
No, by the way, I did mean it that way. Like, I actually did mean it that way. So, Armin,
I know, very intentional.
Yeah, I know.
Anyway, so, and I have no apologies for it. Yeah, go on.
So, leaving Islam is just leaving Islam. You're like an other atheist. You're denying this God, this claim. So, it could be right, left, whatever. And
of course,
I don't think being right is necessarily evil the way the left tries to portray right wing people as evil. That's wrong.
There we go.
But the issue is that if people are trying to portray us as something that we're not, that should be corrected.
Right, exactly. So let's go. Can we get into this a little bit? So I want to see like some of it. I want to get into. There's a couple of interesting things about the demographics. So you had mostly young people. There were more male than female. They had diverse backgrounds from a range of different countries. And then the great majority of respondents. And this is the first thing I want to talk about. Our first generation immigrants.
Before we continue, this is ex-Muslims in United States and Canada, right?
Yes.
Yes.
And not Mexico.
Not Mexico. We don't have a presence in Mexico. Yeah. So one of the things that I'll caution a bit is that the experiences will vary by country. So physical violence, for example, was not that high because you're in America. You'd presume that it would be lower than in countries where the state will come after you. People coming out was not as low as you would expect in a place like Pakistan where you're killed immediately. So if this is a sample that represents ex-Muslims in North America, to a certain extent, you can extend it globally, but in certain aspects, I may not. So I would want your viewers to be cognizant of what it is.
Yeah. Right.
I want to come up with a lot of hypotheses based on, for other countries, based on what is here.
Can we start with immigrants and origins? You have the great majority of respondents are first generation immigrants in North America, and most of the rest are children of immigrants. And for some reason, I was actually surprised by this. I thought that this would be mostly children of immigrants here who've grown up in the West, and they leave Islam, they leave the religion of their parents. But it turns out first generation immigrants who come from those places are about 68%. You've got 68% that are first generation immigrants, 32% non-immigrants.
All of us are immigrants.
Yeah, we are. Yeah, that's right. All of us are immigrants. We're all first generation. You're right.
Wait, so does this mean that they were ex-Muslim, they became ex-Muslim before they,
count that data, at what point did they leave over there?
So that's why I'm saying we have to be careful because a lot of people might conclude, so there's two ways to look at this because some people, one optimistic way of looking at it, Ali, can you mute yourself because I'm hearing echo. One optimistic way of looking at this is like, oh, so if you leave your Islamic country, as soon as you get exposed to other ideas, you might leave Islam. But it might not be that. It might be like, no, they left their Islamic countries because they left Islam, and they left Islam when they were already there. Like I think the three of us, we were already ex-Muslims before. No?
Okay. Not for me. You guys, yes.
Okay, me and Ali, we were already ex-Muslims, atheists before we left our countries. So.
I was sort of very
I'm the only one.
Yeah, you're the only one.
I'm smarter than both of you.
We don't just want smart people and ex-Muslims, right? We want some dumb people too. It's okay. We want some conservatives and Republicans as well. So look, listen. Okay.
One point to add to that is that we have data for that as well, not in this report, but generally. The BBC/Arab Barometer survey had 18% of young Tunisians have left the faith. The Gallup poll in Saudi Arabia had 20% irreligious, 5% confirmed atheists, which is in line, similar to what we have in America. According to Pew, 23% of Muslims that were raised in America have left the faith.
Right, right. Yeah, so there's... Yeah, what I was saying is that when I came here, Armin, I was in the sort of the Reza Aslan phase before. And then I came here. It was also more that I was able to talk about it more. I wasn't able to talk about it there. So over here, you're allowed to process. You feel freer to process those things.
So the part that says that the responders are young, more male than female, and diverse in their backgrounds. So explain the more male than female. Is that because less female, like, are these like adjusted or after? Because I know there's
generally,
like, there's
if you look at atheist polls, that's similar ratios are reflected in general atheist polls.
Right.
And there's no firm reason why that is, but atheists tend to be more male than female. It may be, we can speculate, and this would all be speculation, that
right.
Due to familial ties, due to social pressures that are applied on women far more, especially in our context, women aren't as free as men are.
Right.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, but the thing is that we know, like, even though it's true that more males are more leave their religion more often than females, but I think the polls exaggerate how much true that is, because males are also more expressive than females, right? So let's say, for example, if a poll or Facebook likes or whatever shows that the atheists or ex-Muslims are 80%. Male and 20% female, it might actually be like 70% male and 30% female, and the difference, even though it's still majority male, the poll might even show it more, because you know, female, they might be more reserved, they might be less ready to openly say their views about being rebellious or something like that. Is that possible?
Yeah. I personally don't think so, because of the fact that this similar number has been replicated in a variety of studies with a variety of demographics, like different kinds of atheists fall roughly in line of this ratio.
What's the ratio?
It's about 2-1 or so, like 60-40.
60-40, okay.
Yeah.
There's another sort of thing with women. This is something that I've heard from many of them, is that when men, if they leave Islam, a lot of times there is it's an ideological issue. It's an ideological risk. You know, they say, okay, we don't believe anymore. They start talking about it. And that's what they have to worry about. With women, when they leave Islam, when they leave religion, it's not just an ideological shift. It's also a question of character. It becomes a question. They get labeled with all kinds of things. Oh, you're a woman and you're a Muslim woman. You want to drink and you want to have sex. And you want to. So there's a lot more shaming. It's a lot more difficult, I think, for them to reach that threshold where they can let go, because of the social pressures and everything you're talking about. But that is a big part of the social pressures. It would be interesting to actually get data on that when you guys take this further.
So one thing that we did in the data, when we looked into, we broke it down, I don't think this is reported, this is included in the report. The data was vast. We collected a lot of data. Only a small percentage of it made it to the report. One of the pieces was that how women are treated in Islam was one of the biggest drivers for women in particular.
Wow.
So really? For men, it wasn't. For men, it was close to either science or philosophical reason, like ethics. For women, it was, they recognize how they're second-class citizens.
Right. Interesting. That is so interesting. Actually, that leads me to the question that Blonde Infidel is asking. By the way, the people who are in the live chat, they're only our patrons, so our live streams are only available to patrons. If you're listening to this later, that means you're not a patron. You could become a patron and ask your questions live, like Blonde Infidel is asking right now. Blonde Infidel is saying, were there any results from the survey that were surprising to Muhammad?
So one thing that we just talked about was the right-left divide. It was far more stark than I anticipated. I was expecting it to exist, particularly with how hostile the left is to ex-Muslims. But I wasn't expecting it to be 90% to like 5% or 6%. That was, I think, the biggest one.
Yeah, for me too. I wasn't expecting that either.
Maybe there's a difference between ex-Muslims who are not... the gap is different between the ex-Muslims who are activists and are out there and the ex-Muslims that are just living their lives, right? Because
so we're in contact with XMNA with a lot of regular people that aren't activists, that aren't public. And with those, even with those conversations, it didn't seem like it was as stark as it actually was. So, sorry, one other thing, the education thing I was surprised by. I wasn't expecting people to be as educated as they turned out to be. And also the one of the other things was how long people questioned. So for me, it was less than a year. It was a couple of months, maybe between 6 to 12 months, the questioning period, investigation, and coming to a conclusion. For many people, like I think 63% or so, it was multiple years before they actually were at the stage where they left Islam, which sort of shows you how hard it is. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't expecting it to be that long.
We're going to use this data as a way to, like, by the way, guys, make sure, I don't want to leave this at the end because some people might not say it to the end. I want to say this in the middle. Go find this report and share it, okay? Go, what do they search for to get this report?
Just search apostate reports, it'll pop up. There are no other apostate reports.
Yeah, it's amazing. That's what I did. I just searched apostate report and I found everything about this. So it's
okay. Ali, you wanted to ask a question? You were about to say something.
Yeah. No, I was going to actually ask about the educational level too. So you were saying that that was different from what you expected, the distribution?
Yes. The sheer percentage of high level degrees, 17% in the sort of respondents had PhDs or were doctors or lawyers.
Yeah.
That's 1 in 5. And then college degrees to begin with, like that's like 70-80% of people had college degrees. Only 2% were high school graduates. To me, that's insane.
Yeah, the importance of of education, I guess. Like there's 17 to 20, if you just take the graduate degrees, like master's that's two-fifths of it. Like if people have a master's and a doctoral thing.
Education is dangerous to religion.
I also want to highlight that if you're an ex-Muslim that is not highly educated, don't feel bad. We love our poorly educated.
I love the poorly educated.
For education, not necessarily getting a degree. You can get educated without a degree per se.
Listen, right.
I would actually say that to the ex-Muslims who are not very educated, that means you were smart. Like all these people, they had to have the help of higher education for them to realize that this is nonsense. You managed to figure that out without all that help, so don't feel bad about it.
Again, this is my personal opinion that it's not backed in any sort of data. I would presume that people that are at the high school level did not have opportunities. So they weren't as privileged, they didn't have enough money, their families weren't able to send them to college, or they were in an abusive situation. So one of the guys that I personally know that's an ex-Muslim, he was forced into a marriage at 15 and he didn't go to college. Like as a result of all of that happened, like his life was turned upside down. So there are a lot of people that can't get an education.
Are there any conclusions that you could take from this that might be applied to Muslims and ex-Muslims in Islamic countries, you know, because I'm tempted to become very optimistic because if I look at how many people are leaving Islam in North America, does that mean that the same thing is happening in Islamic countries and just by a little bit of exposure, we're going to be able to make a lot of progress? Like, I'm just like all the predictions by Pew and everything that Islam is going to be the main dominant religion as a percentage is going to even grow and grow and grow. Is it possible that once, like, as more people get connected and talk to each other, is it possible that there's going to be a shift that nobody saw, happening? So, go ahead.
When the 23% data came out from Pew, like 2 or 3 years ago, the 23% of US raised Muslims have left the faith. I was blown away by that. I did not expect it to be that high. That's 1 in 4. So
yes,
like I am an optimist. I wouldn't be in this line of work if I wasn't an optimist. But the numbers blew me away. So it does seem like this is happening globally. This is happening in every country, and it's accelerating. There was a video by somebody you interviewed, that Daniel Hakikaju, where he was giving a lecture. This was I'm not sure what the lecture was, but I saw it recently. And in the lecture, he was talking about how doubt is increasing, and he asked the attendees, how many people know somebody that has left the faith or is doubting the faith? And then his next line was, oh, everybody.
Wow.
In the lecture, everybody knew somebody that was doubting or had left.
Yeah, we're winning.
Well, I mean, I also want to point out, and we had Armin and I did an episode on this. There was a dialogue between Yasser Qadhi and Zakir Naik where they talked about this extensively. I don't know if you saw it.
I saw it. Yeah, I felt bad for Yasser Qadhi.
Yeah, I know. And Zakir Naik was just telling me, he's like, no, because I think Yasser Qadhi said over here in the West, you know, a lot of young people leaving Islam. And then then Zakir Naik goes, nope, it's everywhere. Even in the Gulf countries, everybody's leaving Islam. So it was, that was something.
So 10 years ago, when we were all of us were starting out, would you have imagined this could happen? I couldn't.
No.
No, but so this
beyond
is what
where
I'm,
I was.
So here's the thing: I'm thinking 10 years from now, also what things that are gonna happen are gonna be something that we can't even imagine today. Like, this is why I'm an optimist. Like, we didn't see this much progress 10 years from now, and I'm thinking 10 years from now we're gonna be like, okay, at this point that me and you are speaking, the three of us are speaking, we were very optimistic, but not this optimistic. What the hell, right? One indication to me that things are going in the right direction was the fact that a lot of the defense classes in Islam, you know, online classes, you know, lectures on how to respond to people's problems with Islam, 10 years ago, they were mostly responses to Christianity. But now if you go look, they're all, you know, mostly responses to atheists and atheism, right? So that we are Christians used to be the main threat, but now it's atheism is not the main threat. So that's a sign of progress as well. You wanted to say something before I highlight this question?
Okay. No, go ahead. Here.
Okay, so Riz is upset that he or she didn't get to submit the data, saying, will there be another opportunity for people to submit data who did not get to as part of the original report?
Not in the short term. This was a massive undertaking. We're a small nonprofit, so we don't have the resources to do it again in the short term. Yeah. Guys, unless one of your listeners is really rich and wants to give us a ton of money, we're happy to do it again at that point.
Well, if you guys want to see more stuff like this, go and donate to Ex-Muslims of North America. Guys, this is the kind of stuff that makes it like these studies then are, it's not just one study that like, oh, that was a good information and now we move on. This is going to be cited. It's going to be used. Other people are going to refer to it. It's going to be easier for people to make ex-Muslims matter, because now there's somebody that somebody could like rely on as a way to make these people are now counted. These people are now their existence and their struggles are easier to fight for because of reports like this. Music guy is saying, how is the information gathered for this survey?
So we hired George Mason University, researchers at George Mason University, to conduct the research. So they conducted the survey and they gave us the results, and then we processed the results, and the report is based on the survey results that we got. One other thing that we're doing to add on to your point about, we want other researchers to look into this. We want more people to be talking about ex-Muslims, understanding ex-Muslims. Before the survey, the last, the only other one that I know was by Simon Coty, who had done it was more so qualitative rather than quantitative, where we had spoken to 12 people, I think 12 around that, and done a report based on that. There wasn't a large-scale quantitative study. So with this, the data that we gathered, we're working on releasing it to researchers broadly. We're in talks with a think tank that actually manages religious-related research. And so hopefully in the near future, this will be available broadly to researchers everywhere.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And Simon Coty's book, The Apostates, I should also plug that. I think that's a great book. And you're right, it's interviews with people, but it really is a great first start into looking into what these experiences are. So yeah, so with this data, like when you got this, how did you select the sample? These were mostly members of XMNA, or were there some people outside of that?
No, so it was people that participate in our support community. So we run support communities in about 20 cities. So we had polled those people. The issue with ex-Muslims in general is they're hard to locate. And in order to do a representative sample, you need to poll millions of people to find the ex-Muslims to get their information. So that wasn't possible. So this was more of a convenient sample where we were able to directly tap into ex-Muslims and get their opinions directly that way.
No, I this is still absolutely legitimate. I mean, they do that. Like, if they're looking for... Like if you're looking for to do research on intelligence, you know, you go to Mensa and you get people who are Mensa members. So this is this works perfectly. I think it's excellent.
Okay, I have to admit something. When I first saw this, when I saw Age of Apostasy, I didn't read it carefully at first. I saw this 40 here, and I was like, I knew it. Being ex-Muslim is Sunnah. It was exactly when Muhammad got this revelation. I was like, 40, like, but then I read it and I was like, okay, no, it's not what I thought it was.
but most people are forming their ideas when they're relatively young, right? You're looking at the world, right. You're trying to understand the world. So often you're, I think I was late. I was in my late 20s when I left the religion, but the formation of my ideals happened earlier. So personally, I left religion primarily, I would say, because of Carl Sagan. I read Carl Sagan when I was a teenager, and The Demon Haunted World, which I would say is my favorite book. It was about skepticism. It wasn't about religion. It wasn't about anything like that. It was about how to evaluate the world and come to legitimate conclusions about the world. I read that book. I love that book. I didn't leave the faith. But those tools later equipped me down the road to actually evaluate Islam honestly.
Yeah, for me, actually, I have to say it was also Carl Sagan, fifth grade in Saudi Arabia, the American school there, watching the Cosmos series. Our science teacher got lazy and showed it to us, and we ended up watching it for over several weeks. And that said, it's exactly what you said. It doesn't make you lose the faith immediately, but it stays in your mind. It takes you down a path where you start asking how, you start asking the right questions to be able to do it. It's fantastic.
Actually, this is a very important point, because a lot of people don't understand, they don't understand how long of a process this is. So they're like, oh, what's the point of, like, we have debates with people or we have discussions with people, and they go out of that discussion and they didn't change their opinion. I'm like, what? That's your expectation, was like they were Muslim and we had a discussion with them, and then they're like, you're like, okay, after 30 minutes of talking, okay, I'm an ex-Muslim now. Like, they don't, like, that's, no, that's not how it works. It's like a constant exposure to other ideas over the long term. So it they completely dismiss a lot of this activism because they don't see like a snap, like a right away result out of this discussion. So they're like, oh, so it's useless, right? So communicating that it takes a long time for exposing people to certain ideas to see results is very important for people not to dismiss this kind of activism.
According to the data we have, it took multiple years for people, about 63% or so, it took multiple years for them to leave religion. So the minority position is months, and extremely minority is days. It doesn't happen that way. It takes time, especially like if your entire worldview is wrapped in this, you view the world through the lens of religion. Everybody you love, everybody you care about, your social rituals, everything is based on that. You won't leave that overnight, no matter how strong the evidence is. It takes time for you to process and accept that evidence.
Yeah, especially, right. I think that there's another thing. You do lose people. You lose people who you care about and love. I mean, there's a risk. I mean, a lot of people, when they're leaving Islam, they have to think, okay, well, my parents, you know, I won't be able to, they're not going to talk to me again. My, you know, my brother's going to alienate to me. My friends that I grew up with in school, they're not going to like me anymore. So there's a really, really high cost to just making this decision of changing your mind. Right? Just changing your mind, there's a massive personal, emotional, familial cost to it.
So, well, going back to the data itself, like 60% of people that opened up to people, 60% lost friends, 45% lost family. So that cost is quantified over here. People that were in the closet had lower rates because they came out to fewer people. But it's 60%, you lose 60% of your friends, or 60% of people lose friends as a result of coming out. That's a huge thing. We're social animals. Our species is social. And losing our friends is not something, losing our family is not something that we take lightly. We can take lightly.
Yeah, actually, ostracization and being embarrassed or like being ignored has been described to be more painful than losing a limb. So
if you love your parents, which most people do, and your parents cut you off, how do you process that? That's insanely difficult to do.
Yeah. And there's also, I mean, there's the personal cost, and this is something, again, Simon Cotty wrote about in The Apostates, is like, you know, there's this process called anomy, when you, there's a sociological phenomenon that when you leave something that provided you with a moral compass, even if it was a secondhand moral compass, and once that's taken away from you, you go to the other end of the pendulum. So, you know, you'll see people just like drinking a lot and just having a lot of sex and eating a lot of bacon, and then they eventually go and they reach an equilibrium. No, seriously, this is what happens.
Our data actually does not indicate that.
I know.
So, one thing that I found funny, there was an article in the Washington Post. They picked up the survey and wrote an article about that, they focused on that inaccurately, in my opinion. So, they focused on alcohol drinking and premarital sex. Among ex-Muslims. So 50% of ex-Muslims in the survey said that they drank alcohol as Muslims. Yeah. So that sounds like, okay, they weren't good Muslims to begin with. But when you look up data for Muslims in America, 46, the only data that we were able to find was for college-age Muslims, and 46.6% drank alcohol. So yeah. It's within the margin of error. It's almost identical.
No, no, but what I'm talking about a temporary transition phase. So this is
You're based on personal stories.
No, I'm not. Well, hold on. I'm not just talking about ex-Muslims. I'm talking about people who leave religion and then go through they lose anything related to a moral compass. So it doesn't even necessarily have religion. And then they have to build it up, because you have to build up a new set of a code of ethics and a code of, because the first one you had was secondhand. And then when it's not there anymore, you have to build it up again. And that involves experimentation, which is actually healthy.
Yeah, right? It's experimenting is healthy, but yeah, calling it a code of like morality, I think, is wrong to begin with. Alcohol, drinking alcohol, has nothing to do with morality.
Yeah, yeah. It's what's called a moral compass. If you have a personal moral compass, right? Like where you think
so that my drinking moral alcohol compass is, do I step in the bathroom with my right foot or left foot? Calling it a moral compass is absurd.
No, but that's what your moral compass is when you're a Muslim, right? The drinking alcohol is against their specific moral compass. So they have to discard that and build a new moral compass. You know what I mean?
So I want to talk about the fact that, more ex-Muslims growing. It's not just about the win that we're seeing here is not just more people becoming ex-Muslims and them being free from religion. This, I can see like a lot of the negative experiences that you're highlighting here, right? I think as more ex-Muslims come out, it's going to be harder for Muslims to demonize ex-Muslims, right? Because the more people they know that are ex-Muslim, the harder it is for them to hate it. I know like Islam will teach you otherwise, but Muslims are against social animals. And if they know too many ex-Muslims that they like at some point, I think that's going to help ex-Muslims be able to live within their communities, within Muslim communities, with their Muslim friends, with their Muslim families, while not having to be in the closet about it. Like, so a lot of people think like, talking to Muslims and showing them that ex-Muslim exists is always with the goal of turning them into ex-Muslims. Not always. Like, if Muslims just get exposed to ex-Muslims, even if they remain Muslim, but just learn to talk to ex-Muslims and accept them in their lives, I think that just makes life a lot easier for ex-Muslims, even, you know. So that's another important thing I think we need to highlight. What do you think?
I agree completely. So if you look at the gay rights movement in America, a lot of it had to do with visibility. Gay people came out to their friends, to their families, and gained acceptance that way. Familial ties tend to be very, very strong. That's why religion tends to attack those a lot. That's a way to control people. But if you're, and we've seen this again and again, where families cut off their children due to leaving religion, but say the child then has grandkids, and the grandma wants to see the grandkids. And at that point, there's a rapprochement and they want to get back together and let's not talk about religion. So sooner or later, the fact that this is your child tends to dominate over religion for a good amount of people. So the more people that are coming out, I agree completely with your assessment that it'll make it easier for everybody down the road. And we have plenty of personal stories about that where one person left, they came out to their family, siblings left as a result of that. And then like if the family is divided, half the family is atheist, half is still Muslim. So you can cut off one individual out of like, say like your family of five or six people. But if half of the family is atheist, what are you going to do at that point?
Exactly. I do want to use this comment as a way to highlight something. Riz is saying, thanks for answering my question. I wish I knew about the survey when it took place. We'll look forward to the next one. Guys, ex-Muslims of North America is going to have a lot of other things that you need to look forward to. But make sure you go beyond just following them on Facebook and Twitter, because you might miss things if you just follow them over there. Subscribe to, you have a newsletter, right?
Yes, on our website.
Okay, so if you want to, Riz, if you want to make sure you don't miss anything else from ex-Muslims of North America, subscribe to their newsletter. Dee had a question. Dee was saying, I was wondering if it was first or second generation immigrants and what countries are they from? So I think we addressed the fact that it was mostly first generation. Did they have to cut ties? I think we also answered that. But so the part that we didn't answer was the countries that they were mostly from.
So it's a variety of countries. So a lot of it, since we're talking about a North American population, is contingent upon immigration patterns to North America. So if you look at the Far East, there are not a lot of Muslims moving from Malaysia and Indonesia to America. So our survey sample represents that. There are not many Indonesians and Malaysians that responded. So most of our respondents were for either from South Asia or from the Arab world. People from North Africa, from the Middle East, and from South Asia. There were more people from South Asia than the Arab world. But again, the demographics directly represent that. The population of South Asian Muslims is massive. It's like 600 million or so.
There's another aspect to this that's the report that you talked about, the 23% who've left the slum. There was a large chunk of them that was what they call the Persian population in California,
yeah.
Right? The Iranians in California. So, did you have any of them? Because they apparently were overrepresented among the overall ex-Muslims in that original report. So
I don't know about the breakdown between Persians and non-Persians, but we did have Persian respondents. I don't know what the ratios per se were, but they weren't overrepresented in the sample. I know that.
Okay, got it. Yeah. So
D is saying our Nation of Islam, American Islam, also defecting as it is relevant to Middle East.
So Nation of Islam, a lot of people in the 70s left Nation of Islam and became Orthodox Muslims, Sunni Muslims, and Salafis as well. Mm-hmm. So the number of people that still subscribe to Nation of Islam is very, very small. Actually, 1/3 of Muslims in America are African American. They came from that background. Like, they were Nation of Islam back in the day. In the 70s, they converted to mainstream Islam, Sunni Islam. And our survey does not represent them well. So the experiences of African Americans tend to be different than immigrant communities. So our support groups were, I presume, not needed or not desired.
You know, that's like Dave Chappelle and Mike Tyson and people like that. Right? Yeah,
exactly.
Interesting. Maybe is there a way to reach out to them?
So we work with Black non-believers, and they have some amount of people that are from that background. Mm-hmm. So we can reach out to them through that channel.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Fawad is saying, what survey question you would like to ask in the future? Like anything that you didn't ask that you would?
No, we spent a good amount of time.
Yeah.
No, but okay. So let's do another, like the questions that you asked and then the data you got. Did you get the data and then think, oh, you know, now I want to know about this part of it? Like for example, when I saw the male female thing, right, the distribution, yeah, that's 2-1, then now I'm thinking, okay, if we do any further surveys, or if you guys do any further, or anybody does it, you want to know the reasons, right, for what the women would say, that, you know, why.
So we already have that data, like.
Yeah.
Again, we had a massive amount of data. This is a small subset that we collected into this. And women's rights was a big part of the reason. That was a very stark difference between men and women. That women's rights was the primary reason for them leaving. And for men, it was science, like the errors within Islam.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So regarding why women and the men disparity exists, for that, you need a much bigger survey than we would conduct.
So what kind of science exactly? Like, I'm trying to, like, as an activist, I want to see, like,
that's another follow-up question.
What kind of science? Yeah.
So we didn't ask what kind of science. We asked what were the primary drivers. So things like ethics, things like science. We didn't ask about the specifics about what kind of science. So yeah, that would be a follow-up question, what specifically caused you to doubt. And the problem generally tends to be, going back to the multiple years thing, is that it's not one thing. There are multiple things that accumulate. And we phrased our question that way. Was there primary motivator, secondary motivator, tertiary motivator? So for me, I knew about the sex slavery thing while I was a Muslim. I dismissed it that there's something that I don't understand. But then when there were factual errors that started popping up, like scientific errors, at that point I was like, this is bullshit.
I know, but do they mention science? Because it could be like when people say it was science, do you know if they're referring to scientific mistakes in the Quran or no? They just like studied evolution or studied, I don't know, the Big Bang theory or the primordial soup theory.
There's a separate category that we ask about contradictions. So there were a good amount of people that left because of contradictions. So I presume that were contradictions within the Quran, contradictions within scripture. So the oft-cited, there's no compulsion in religion versus kill ex-Muslims, kill apostates. So there are a lot of contradictions that exist within scripture. And I, for that, a lot of people, they see those contradictions and they make no sense to them.
Yeah, so I guess, and that's a good point that you make, that you know, it's not just that it was science that made them leave. It's the lack of science or the problematic, you know, scientific inaccuracies in the scripture.
So if you start to understand evolutionary biology at all, there's no way you can believe in the Adam and Eve story. That's an insanely stupid story from a scientific perspective. And people that are studying biology, that are doctors, that are well educated. So I understood evolution, and to me, the Adam and Eve story made no sense as a result of that. I came up with justifications, but when push came to shove, it was obvious that it was bullshit.
So you're suggesting that the people who are saying, just going back to reading the scripture, like the best way to, the theory that the best way to create atheists is to just read the Bible or read the Quran, you're saying that's actually...
if you have a well-grounded understanding of the world itself. So if you understand skepticism, if you understand science, if you understand these things, when you turn that lens onto religion, it fades away immediately.
So you're saying it's a combination of both. You need to have some basic scientific understanding and also look what your scripture says. That's a dangerous mixture for religion.
Yeah. Educated people and religion tend not to not mix well.
Okay, so we need to do both. I also want to highlight the fact that a lot of people think like, oh, okay, this was in North America. It looks very optimistic. I wish we had some same results in Islamic countries. I just want to, I don't know if you saw this, Mohammed. There was a recent survey that we highlighted in Iran. Half of Iranians within their lifetime have left Islam within the past generation. Like within the past 40 years, half of Iranians who not half of all Iranians, half of Iranians who were Muslim left Islam within their lifetime. So that's 50% apostasy. Like Iran is a Muslim minority country right now. Like, did you?
that was 40,000 people, I think, who they
survey
for that.
And no, it was 50. They cleaned it to 40. So they cleaned the suspicious ones. And this was done by a university as well, so it's not like an online Facebook poll or something like that, right? So this was a scientific. Like, did you ever think that you could think like, oh yeah, Iran is an Islamic minor. Only 30% of Iranians are Muslim.
I still have trouble accepting that. I'm having hesitation that can't really be true. But the fact is, we're going in that direction, and it's happening globally. Like, put Islam to one side. If you look at the West, if you look at other religions across the board, religions are dying out because we know too much as a species. We've learned too much. We understand reality. We understand nature. The religious fables are so absurd that you can't really hold on to that if you understand anything about the world.
Yeah. To what extent do you think, like, because a lot of these numbers are, and you see this across, like you said, all across all the religious groups, millennials. Like millennials onward, right? At everybody, young people are leaving religion at sometimes rates of 35% to 40%. Okay, that they're just not religious. So, to what extent do you think that the internet and social media, and everybody sort of connecting and seeing each other's religion, do you think that that has had any impact?
It's had a massive impact. So, a lot of changes is driven by information and knowledge, and the internet has allowed knowledge to proliferate. So, like, we run Wiki Islam now, and Wiki Islam has a lot of information about the flaws within Islam. Similar resources exist for other religion. There's, I think, the Watchtower for Mormonism. Once that data is available, if you're having doubts, if I'm having doubts today, I'll go online and look up what the verse actually says. So somebody says that wife beating is okay in Islam. I'll go look up the Quran. I'll go look up the Hadith as a Muslim. When I see the actual resources, I'm like, okay, this is terrible. Yeah. In the past, you weren't able to do that. You weren't literate enough. You didn't have access to the books.
Well, I had these paperback Qurans, and I would if I wanted to find something, I had to look in the index, and you couldn't find sex slavery in the index of the Quran, right? You'd have to look up something else, and you know, so you would have to find it, and you wouldn't know if it's the right translation. You know, someone would say it's the other, but now you have all of the translations. You can hover over one word, and it gives you all the syntax and all the etymology of the words.
Yeah, but that takes a lot of. But here's the thing, Ali. This is on top of everything you're saying. Something like Wiki Islam is even better than that, because
of course,
for you to be able to go look at the Quranic verse and actually analyze the root of this word and put things together, that takes a lot of work. But then you could go to Wiki Islam and which sources it has done that already for you. So, by the way, I want to make a request for Wikipedia Islam. One thing we ex-Shias have a problem with is that a lot of anti-Islam criticism, like Islamic criticism, it just assumes Sunni Islam, right? Like criticizing Sunni hadith, Sunni ways of looking at things. So if I know, like, you guys already are stretched thin with everything you're doing, so but maybe like
have a volunteer. So with Wiki Islam, for example, we need editors. We need people that are familiar with Islam as writers in English. We're translating it to Arabic right now. We're translating it in Urdu as well. So we want translators. We want
Persian.
Not yet. Again, it's a matter of volunteers, right? So if there are listeners to your shows that are...
I can announce that you're looking for Persian volunteers. Is that, would you be interested?
Sure.
Okay, I will announce on the Persian show, Atheist Republic Persian show, that you're looking for volunteers on that. So yeah.
So if there are people out there, and there are a lot of people that have the same outlook, and it doesn't even, we're accepting Muslim volunteers as well, as long as they're willing to do it honestly and are willing to look at, like, portray the facts, whatever they may be. There are facts that are flattering to Islam. Islam is not pure evil or anything. There are positives as well. And we're happy to write articles about that and include that as well.
Orphans. The classic,
charity. So,
No. Zakat is not the proper form of charity. Not charity. The only taking care of orphans, I'll give Islam that as a positive, but not charity. But go on.
Again, that can be a good article where it summarizes both positions. Charity is a positive within Islam, and it's not according to what your perspective is. But having all of that data available in one format, in one page, helps a lot. So regarding the Shia thing, if there are volunteers out there that want to contribute, you can go to Wiki Islam. There's an email address you can email. We will set you up with an account. And if you want to do translation work, we'll set you up with an account and you can start with the translation work. It's a matter of resources. We don't have that many resources to do the work ourselves. We need a lot of volunteers to make this happen. Sticking on Wiki Islam for a second, over the past year, we've written pretty much every article on the site. We've deleted 2/3 of the content that was biased in one way or the other. And we've rewritten most of the rest to make it more neutral and academic. Our perspective is the truth, what scripture says, what Islamic scholars say is enough. That's enough. We don't need to inject our opinions in there. State what the facts are and let them speak for themselves.
Yeah, it used to be very biased in a way that it would go on to find this obscure hadith that is not even sahih and make it, use it as a way to prove that Islam says this horrible thing. And we're like, this is like a very, like, this is not like even a central text in Islam that you're using as a way, like, you don't need to make it seem worse than it is. It's already very bad. So
we want to have Muslim readers. We want to have Muslim volunteers. We want to have ex-Muslim volunteers, ex-Muslim readers. The point is that let the facts speak for themselves, wherever they may lie. There may be some positives, there may be some negatives. We want to present the facts as they are.
Right. Blonde Infidel is saying, how will the results of this survey influence the direction of XMNA's activism?
So for one, we're going to be focusing on the specifics of why people leave religion and work to make it easier for people to understand those flaws within Islam.
That's excellent.
Same.
Yeah.
Music Guy is saying, are there any numbers about Sunni or Shia ex-Muslims in this report? I might have missed it.
So the data we got was similar to what the demographics actually are. It was in the 80 something percent for Sunnis, 10 something percent for Shias, which is what the broader demographics, the ratios of Shias and Sunnis are.
Okay. D is saying, what is the best way to inform our family, friends, and co-workers about ex-Muslims? I live in a Catholic majority state and people are not even aware. How do we introduce them?
So I would simply state it from the perspective that people are leaving religion. The rise of the nuns is one example, that it's not something that's confined to the West. For some reason, there's often this idea that the social trends that are happening only matter in the Western context, but the same trends apply everywhere. So if you think that doubt is rising and disbelief is rising in the West, why would it not be rising in the East? The same drivers, the same scientific knowledge, the same understanding, the same availability of the internet applies to everybody. So I would state it as more of a global change which applies to everybody.
Okay, yeah.
Music, you go ahead.
No, I was going to say, and we should also try to normalize, because, you know, when we talk about lapsed Catholics or secular Jews or ex-Mormons or ex-Scientology, like, these people all get TV shows and book deals and become comedians and everything. But when you say ex-Muslims, like, oh, these are native informants, and let's ban them from YouTube and let's ban them from Twitter and things like that. So there's a, I think we should talk like to especially speak to the liberal conscience that if you guys are totally okay with all the apostasy in all of these other religions, but with the ex-Muslims, there's somehow a problem, then that is anti-Muslim bigotry in itself.
That is racism, plain pure and simple. Yeah, that is, you can't view a brown person to be cognizant of bullshit the way you can view a white person to be cognizant of bullshit, then you're a racist.
That is bigotry, yeah, absolutely.
By the way, our patrons are asking some very good questions today. Yeah. If you're not a patron and you're listening to this, consider joining as a patron so you could join us live and ask these questions live from us. Music Guy is saying, it would be cool if these surveys ask if any YouTubers or social media personalities deeply influence the person to leave Islam.
So we did ask one question. I don't remember what the exact numbers were did somebody influence you? For the vast majority of people, it wasn't. So most ex-Muslims, at least in the past, have been isolated. I think it was around 60-70% of people that weren't influenced by anybody or did not know anybody that was an ex-Muslim. So more for most people, and the same for me. I don't know about you guys. It was about reading and understanding and looking into sources directly. It wasn't some third party.
Yeah, there were none that time. Like when we started out, like there wasn't anything. And in fact, like I don't know, when I first... there wasn't even any, I don't think Twitter or these things were around, but this is a generational thing. It'd be really interesting to follow up on this later or look at younger ex-Muslims and see, because I know with, you know, we have our own people. We've got like, you know, Abdullah Samir on YouTube and we've got Harris Sultan. We've got all these guys, but there's also Arabic YouTube, Arabic apostate YouTube is a huge thing. And they're not burdened by, okay, we're speaking in English. How are we going to be looked at politically? Are we going to be seen as this or that? They're not burdened by any of that. They can just speak about the material the way they speak about the material, and they go into a lot of depth with it.
That's Ali, that's so true. Like Atheist Republic Persian, I do not censor. There's nobody coming after me. I don't have to worry about being politically correct or anything. It's so... Yeah. Liberating to be able to. This is why I'm enjoying my Persian show so much, because I get to be fully me.
Going back to the numbers, 70% of 78% of respondents said they personally did not know any ex-Muslims before they left the faith. Only 22% knew somebody else that had left the faith. So it was relatively rare. Like maybe 10 years down the road, as we move forward, as more and more YouTubers and social influencers, people like that. Zain Malik came out as an atheist, or not an atheist, as somebody that has rejected Islam.
Zain Malik, Kumail Nanjiani, Aziz Ansari, like all of the famous ones tend to be, ex.
Given that we're beating you guys, because in Iran people are leaving Islam faster than in America, have you considered that maybe the best way to get people to leave Islam is by enforcing Sharia?
It probably is. Once you enforce Sharia, you don't go back. It takes it's what 45 years or 42 years or something, and you guys are still stuck there. So I'd rather sidestep that.
Try it in America. I think ex-Muslims are
Pakistan is trying it. We're going there closer and closer every year.
Yeah. Once you go Pakistan, you never go Pakistan.
I do want to highlight, I know most people who are listening to this already know, but I just want to emphasize, because a lot of people, when they think polled, just assume like, a questionnaire was sent out and you collect certain information. Good polls and scientific polls, like this is a lot of work. Like this is, I know some people, believe it or not, that think like a Facebook poll is like that just is like as good as like a poll that, for example, you guys are putting out. Like this is, if people were familiar with the amount of work that goes into making a poll scientific and making sure that the data are collected in the right way and then analyzed in the correct way, like if anybody ever participates in all the work that goes behind this, they would like will have a much higher respect for the entire process. Right? This is not
statistical analysis. Is insane.
Yeah. Can you speak to that? Like
took us a 3-year. This is. A 3-year process from the start of it, from hiring George Mason to collecting the data to analyzing the data. I would say this is the largest, most comprehensive project we've ever done.
And it's very costly too. Like, yeah, and it's costly too. I'm so like, these are people like that are experts in data collection and analysis, and these people's times are not just you don't get these people for cheap, right? So yeah, I just wanted to highlight, make sure I highlight that for people who don't know. Ali, did you want to mention something?
Yeah, I had to, like, I mean, we just have a few minutes left, but I wanted to ask one thing. Like, do you get any sense of, I mean, you know, I know there was this poll that said there were 23% ex-Muslims in the United States, but were you able to glean how many people are ex-Muslims in the U.S. based on this? Was there any data or anything that you looked at?
No, this is not. It wasn't a representative sample, so we can't. So you need to do a survey of Muslims to get that information. This was a survey of ex-Muslims.
Yeah, is that something that you think you might do? Like actually look at Muslims and talk? No,
unless again big donors are needed for doing that kind of research. This was at the very top limit of what we could achieve.
Yeah.
So again, if as ex-Muslims grow, our organizations, our capacity to do good work will increase. So support ex-Muslims, support ex-MNA, support groups around the world. There's most every country has an ex-Muslim group popping up. The more resources they have, the more they can help others, the more they can do original research, the more they can make it easier for Muslims to leave the faith. If you want a better world for tomorrow, this is the way you make it happen.
Can I ask one more question? This is probably the last one. But do you fear that with... because XMNA did this survey, do you think that big Muslim organizations like CARE and everything will go out, and because they have lobbyist influence and everything, do you think they'll try to discredit it that, oh, this is just a bunch of ex-Muslims who did this?
So this is not in the purview of CARE. They deal with more with civil liberties and that kind of stuff, and they direct action per se. This is just data. So it may be that other researchers try to discredit it. So there's an institute based in Texas, Yaqeen Institute, that has done multiple surveys regarding atheism. And what's hilarious to me is their sample size, they go to Muslims and ask them, do you feel doubt? Like they don't ever contact ex-Muslims at all. And worse than that, they even go to religious sources in the sense of imams and stuff and ask them and use their opinion to perform their data. They're not actually looking at ex-Muslims.
Yeah.
Well, I think if they were being strategic, like, I don't know, like Daniel Hirgachu or Yasser Qadi, they should actually celebrate this information because they could use it as fear-mongering for why their services are needed. If you're an Islamic education institution, you should be like, guys, look, we're losing the Muslims. We need fund, give us money so we could like spread Islam. And like this should like be up, like this should be sell, like this should be, this data should be a gift to them because they need the fear to be able to justify why they need funding for more education, I guess.
A good amount of Muslim preachers, I guarantee, will do that. We already see that. So whatchamacallit, we put out a video a few months ago, and there's a Somali Sheikh Saeed Rage, he's popular around the world. He was speaking in Canada where he talked about the Pew survey, 23%. And then Bilal Phillips has talked about this. There are a bunch of different religious scholars that were just apoplectic about what is going on. And they're speaking about it because they're seeing it. And of course, they want to direct their programs in that direction. From my perspective, it's wonderful. The more they try to fight us, the more they lose because facts are on our side. The more people that look at this, the better.
Because that means there's something to fight against. If all these prominent known personalities are coming out and expressing concerns about this, that means it's a real concern. It's a real phenomenon that's happening. That's a good barometer to check it too. But let's do these questions.
Yeah. So D is saying, how do we stand up for oppressed Muslims and also say Islamophobia is BS? They never believe us.
So it depends on who you're talking to, right? So the phrase we use is anti-Muslim bigotry. Bigotry against anybody is wrong. Bigotry against Muslims is wrong. Islamophobia is a term that is tinged with conflation of Islam and Muslims. So that distinction needs to be clarified. So in all of your conversations, make sure to make that distinction. And Muslims won't like that because a lot of Muslims want to defend Islam. They want to do that conflation. So simply because they don't believe you doesn't mean that what you're saying is not resonating with a lot of people.
Yeah.
Right. To go back to the normalizing dissent tour, Armin and I did a talk in Georgia where the tagline was defending Muslims attacking Allah, I believe.
Yeah, fighting Allah.
Fighting Allah.
Fighting Allah.
So that pissed off Muslims across the board. That pissed off right-wing people because defending Muslims, fighting Allah, left-wing people don't like. But the point is that different people have their own biases. You can only stand up ethically and do the right thing.
Mm-hmm. Right. Music guy saying, it's funny how exciting the survey is to me. Thank you for bringing it to our attention. Louis is asking about Masih Ali Najad. We're not going to cover it here, but go follow us on Atheist Republic, and if Ali wants, we could do a stream on that as well.
We're gonna
give you an update, and we're gonna cover that on Atheist Republic. I have one more question before we leave. So actually, when it comes to you getting big donors, I hope you get big donors soon. But I think even if you do get big donors, I would like a survey like this to happen with a good enough distance for the comparison with the first set to be meaningful, right? Imagine if we have another set of these data like in 5 or 10 years, and then not only we have the data then, but we could also see the change in all of this demographic.
There's a lot of different work that needs to be done. So if we have a lot of money, it doesn't mean that we'll simply focus on a survey. There's a lot of programs that we work on. We were mentioning Wiki Islam. We have the persecution tracker that you were mentioning. We're documenting cases of persecution of people for blasphemy and apostasy.
We should talk about that as well again at some point. But I'm assuming in 10 years from now, ex-Muslims of North America is a lot bigger and has a lot more resources, that a second round of the survey would be possible by then, I'm assuming. So I'm just so excited to see the difference. Guys, but make sure you go and check out Ex-Muslims of North America. If you can't afford to donate to Ex-Muslims of North America, you can help them by sharing their surveys and sharing their content or subscribing to them or
volunteering.
You're volunteering, right? So don't feel bad if you're broke. There are other ways to help, so consider that. Ali, did you want to say something?
Yeah, I was going to say that, we've been talking about big donors, and some of that is tongue in cheek, but if you're a small donor, go ahead and, donate. Every bit of it matters. This kind of work is incredible. So absolutely, go ahead and do whatever you can for it.
Also, if you want to follow our work, our website is exmuslims.org. On there, you can sign up for our newsletter. You can look at our social media. You can look at the recent work we've done. We've been doing a lot of work related to increasing the public presence of ex-Muslims, both within the general public and on the legislative end.
Mm-hmm. Nobody types URLs in browsers. Everybody just uses Google. Just search for ex-Muslims of North America. Okay. Does anybody actually write URLs in their browser? Nobody.
Do you do that? Yeah. Maybe we're just old now.
You guys. Okay.
Yeah. It usually autofills it for you. You start typing and it autofills it. So whatever. Okay. So
Anyways, this was really great. Thank you so much.
Great talking.
Mohammed, it was awesome.
Yeah. Hopefully you will come back again sooner.
I was going to do another thing. Yeah, if you like what you're hearing here, and you're listening to us and you're not watching us, then please do consider going to patreon.com/sjme and becoming a patron for as little as $1 a month. If you become a patron, you get to watch all of these streams live. You get to interact, ask questions. You can ask questions ahead of the stream, and we will prioritize those questions and answer them first. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah, do consider doing that if you can.
Yeah, some patrons, I don't know what they said. They send me the comments. No, don't send me the comments. If you want your questions to be prioritized and asked first, you need to go into the Patreon post and then leave a comment, your question. And if you can't make it live, patrons get to send their questions ahead of time if they can't be here, and we will ask it live. It needs to be a comment under the relevant post for the stream. Anyways, okay, guys, I'm going to end it here. Talk to you guys soon.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Be best.
The secular jihadists have been made possible thanks to the Illuminati and the covert support of Israel and the CIA. That's what we have been told, but we haven't received our checks yet. If you like what we do, please support us. Share the podcast with your friends. Write and tweet us with topic and guest suggestions. Or head over to secularjihadists.com and give $1 or more for exclusive access to live video. Have your questions read and answered on the air, and more. Till next time, may the flying spaghetti monster be with you.